I'm going to read the passage that we're going to be in tonight, and then I'm going to open in prayer. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 8. And to get a feel, if you were here last week and you heard Joe talk about don't be too righteous, don't be too wise, and don't be too wicked, we're looking at what would kind of be a bookend of the other side of that as we go into chapter 8. So we're going to read it. Chapter 8, starting verse 1. It says, "Who is like the wise? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the hardness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's command because of God's oath to him. Be not hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand in an evil cause, for he does whatever he pleases. For the word of the king is supreme, and who may say to him, 'What are you doing?' Whoever keeps a command will know no evil thing, and the wise heart will know the proper time and the just way. For there is a time and a way for everything, although man's troubles lie heavy on him. For he does not know what is to be, for who can tell him how it will be? No man has the power to retain the spirit or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. All this I observed while applying my heart to all that is done under the sun, when man had power over man to his hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God, because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will he prolong his days like a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is a vanity that takes place on earth, that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of their righteous, of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. And I commend joy, for man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun." God, the stuff that you give us to deal with in Ecclesiastes isn't, it's not nice and neat, and it's not convenient to just be passive with. God, will you be gracious to us? Will you be gracious to me as I speak on this text? And will you be gracious to us to hear, Father, what your Spirit is teaching us? God, let the truth that is in this passage not just be something that we see and believe, but something that we hear and believe. God, that we hear your word and we believe it. God, we love you and we need you. To you be the glory forever. Amen. Wickedness does not deliver the fool, but wisdom doesn't deliver the wise. And that's a bummer. That's really what we were seeing last week is when Joe was talking about the end of chapter 7, you know, don't be overly righteous, why destroy yourself, or don't be overly wicked. You know, and we saw wisdom isn't going to deliver you, and wickedness isn't going to deliver you. If you've absolved yourself from God, if you removed yourself from God, that these things won't deliver you. I know this might sound kind of weird, but it doesn't matter how good of an American citizen you are. If you're in Mexico illegally, you're going to get in trouble. It doesn't matter how good of a human we are. When we enter God's kingdom, we're not in our own kingdom anymore. We're in God's kingdom. So it doesn't matter what our human righteousness does. When we go in to God's kingdom, it's his rule. It's his standard. And so that was a quick preview of where was that. And then it goes into 8 verse 1. And Joe and I were talking about this because he was studying. He was saying, well, he was supposed to go all the way through 8:1. And this 8-1, it sits weird because it doesn't quite sit with the first part that we listened and doesn't quite with the second, but it totally connects them. And I just want to, it's a linchpin. You go and you read certain stories and there's that linchpin that keeps the two pieces together. You know, you think about the couple that met, well, who is the person that introduced them? And I can think Ben and Amanda, the linchpin of their marriage is Leviticus. backstory, they met in a superb Bible study going through Leviticus. And so you read this, and it says this linchpin that is going on, and it says, who is like the wise, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? And it's one of those rhetorical, well, no one does. After reading at the beginning or before, wisdom is outside of our grasp. The interpretation of a thing is outside of our grasp. And with Ecclesiastes, we've been going through, and it's everything is vanity. You know, this wise king, Solomon, the preacher, is going through, and he is saying, look, I'm wise, I've got all the wisdom, but, you know, who's got wisdom? Who can understand these things? Because everything is messed up. And because he's going from that under the sun. We're looking at things from under the sun. What's going on under the sun? Not from God's perspective. And so you've got this guy who believes in Yahweh. He believes in God. He believes in the God of Israel. And he's trying to figure out what the heck's going on. He's looking at the world around him going, all right, what I read about in the Torah, what I read about in the history of Israel is not lining up with the world that I see around us. And it's a similar place for us. We read the Bible, we look and see how God created things, and we look at the order that God established, and we look around the world around us, and we look at the experiences we go through and go, what the heck's going on? And then so you go and say, okay, I've got a hard situation. You know, I know things aren't supposed to happen like this. So you go and you ask person A, okay, how do I deal with this hard situation? And they tell you, well, you do X, Y, and Z. Okay, all right, cool. And so you go get someone else's advice. Well, what do I do? Oh, you do L, M, and Q. Okay, well, all right, well, maybe I'll go to a third person and they'll pick one of the right. Well, what you need to do is alpha, omega, and theta. All right, now what are we doing? What options do I take? He says here, who is like the wise? Who can know the interpretation of anything? And immediately, it's this moment of despair. And because it says, a man's wisdom makes his face shine and the hardness of his face is changed. That moment when you get something, that aha moment. And so you're dealing with the hard situation. You're dealing with, or even dealing with math. You know, go back to grade school. Like, I just don't get it. 2 + 2 = 4. Why? I don't get it. And there's that aha moment. Oh, I get it. And you get excited. It's just math. No need to get excited, but you get it. You get excited. And that the preacher here is saying, we don't know these things. This wisdom is above, but when we do get a glimpse of it, it brings joy. It brings excitement. No one here has gotten good advice and said, I think I'm going to go cry a little bit. You're like, that's the best advice I've heard all day. Unfortunately, at least the case for me, I never listened to the advice on the front end, and I always go, oh, I should have listened to that. That would have been really good advice. So I tell someone else later in the same situation, and they don't listen. And I say, okay, well, in 10 years, you'll go, oh, why didn't I listen? I'm like, same reason I didn't, because I'm an idiot. So you got this linchpin going. Wisdom is outside of our grasp. There's things that are jacked up. And then it's going to go back into this really messy section about being wise when you think you're wise, but it not delivering you, it not saving you, it not doing anything, and then being a fool, and it, once again, still not doing anything. It says in verse 2, it says, I say, keep the king's command because of God's oath to him. If there's a king, do what he says. We don't have a king, we have a president. If you're in the presence of the president and he says, you know, go key that car, you're like, okay, yes, sir. Yeah. Be not hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand in an evil cause, for he does what he pleases. For the word of the king is supreme, and who may say to him, what are you doing? Whoever keeps a command of the king will know no evil thing, and we'll stop there. You've got this king, and on a side note, the verse or chapter 8 just has a lot of language difficulties. So if you guys are reading not the ESV, you're going to be getting variations of this. But we're going to kick through the ESV because I'm not going to preach out of 6 Bibles tonight. You're welcome. And it says, don't take your stand in an evil cause. You know, whatever the king says, just do it. This should cause you to get uncomfortable. So if, you know, the king tells me to go punch the old lady in the face, I need to do it. You know, I have to obey him. God's oath. You know, what do I do? So go back to 7. Don't be overly wise. Who here has been young and dumb before? Okay, everyone, glad. All right. You get something. You get something in your mind. You're like, this situation is wrong. I'm going to stand up for it in the middle of class. I'm going to stand up for it in the middle of work. I'm just going to stand. I'm going to make a stand right here. Time and place. If you're in front of a judge, let's say you're speeding, you get pulled over, you go stand in front of the judge, and the judge says, to pay off your sentence, what you need to do is you need to go tag the courthouse building. There's probably a proper time and place to start saying this judge needs to be fired because he's an idiot and he doesn't even know what he's doing. That very moment probably isn't it. Don't yell and scream at the judge. What do you do when you have conflicting situations? You think of Jesus when he approached the Pharisees in the New Testament. He says, you guys are nitpicking the law. He says, you're getting mad that I'm healing on the Sabbath. But doesn't the law say if a donkey or a mule or an ox falls into a hole that you need to pull them out? Wouldn't on the Sabbath you pull that that donkey or the ox out of the hole? Well, of course you would. So you've got conflicting wisdom. What do you do? Do you confront an evil king when he tells you to do something wrong right there on the spot? I mean, he's telling you to do something evil. And it's these are things that we say, if I'm wise, then I'm golden. As long as I do the wise thing and you carry this chip on your shoulder, things are fine for me. You know, Jesus is going to recognize how awesome I am because I'm so wise and I'm doing the right thing no matter what. I'm burning bridges and I'm knocking people down and, you know, I'll just deal with things later, but Jesus will give me a pat on the back because I did the right thing no matter how I did it. No? It says, the word of the king is supreme. Who may say to him, whatever you're doing? Whoever keeps the command of a king will know no evil thing. What he's saying there is, if you disobey a judge or a king or a police officer or someone of authority to their face, you're going to get in trouble. It doesn't matter if you're right. If you're disobeying them, you're going to get in trouble. You know, with the kids, you know, you're like, do this. No. No, I don't care if I was wrong. You're going to do it anyways, you know. So what do you do with that? He says in verse 5, the wise heart will know the proper time and the just way. For there is a time and a way for everything, although man's troubles lie heavy on him. For he does not know what is to be, for who can tell him how it will be? That's Ecclesiastes chapter 3. There's a time for everything. But then on top of that, we don't know what the time is. We're so intent sometimes on trying to do the right thing, on trying to do the wise thing, on trying, okay, we're gonna, with our righteousness, we're going to nail this. We're going to get it on the head, and we're just going to go busting down doors, and we're just going to show people how awesome God is. But in the midst of that, we totally blow it. We jack it up. Because we thought we were doing it right. No, I know I was doing it right. I've got this proof text in the Bible. I'm right every time. But if we don't take into account that we have no control over anything, I'm glad that we're trying to work things out for God. Jesus appreciates your wonderful effort. Now stop making a mess on the kitchen table, put the milk away, put the chocolate away, and let God make the chocolate milk. You know, there's no reason for us to get in there and ruin what God is trying to do. There's a certain time to stand up and die for Christ. And there's a certain time to shut your trap. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he attempted and was part of conspiracies to assassinate Hitler. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, one of the 19th or the 20th century's finest theologians. What he probably didn't do is, hey, Hitler, I know I just met you. I'm going to try and kill you. Okay? All right. I just want to let you know it's coming your way. Done. That assassination attempt's over. It's weird to think that theologians were in on assassination attempts, but, you know. I'm like, can we do that? Is that in the Bible? It's in there. Maybe. I wrote it in mine. You're allowed to assassinate Hitler. Okay. Verse 8 says, no man has power to restrain the spirit or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. Your life, the day you die, wars that come and go, and people that commit themselves to a life of wickedness, a life of sin, a life of rejecting God, you cannot be delivered from those things. Who here was given the opportunity to live? Who said, before you're born, said, would you like to live? We didn't make that decision. It was made for us. The day we die, In the natural course of history, we don't know when it's going to be. Harry Techfarber, the guy was 90. Wasn't he already 90? Well, anyways. Yeah, 90. In the womb. He's good. Well, he's in. He made it. Okay. He made it longer than most people. Didn't have a day to control when he was going to pass away. War. Who here can go and stop war? Because Israel would love to have you on their team right now. Who here knows of anyone who committed their life to wickedness and is going to get rewarded from it? Is going to be delivered from it. Even if you die in it, never getting caught legally, who gets delivered from it? No one. On the sad note, the preacher says, all this I observe while applying my heart to all that is done under the sun. When man had power over man to his hurt. That's the hard thing. It's not that good people make bad mistakes when they're leading other people. It's bad people make horrible mistakes or intentions when they're leading other people. And so you have corruption. You have bad parents. You have bad teachers. You have bad this, bad that. You have bad friends. And as the preacher observed, it's horrible the way things are uncontrollable. We can't control it when someone has power over someone else to their hurt. Wisdom doesn't deliver. This preacher's talking to this, assumably a kid, based off of what we'll get into in chapter 12, or at least someone who's going to be in the presence of a king and saying, look, just because you think you've got all this knowledge, don't just go running around shooting your lip off because you think you got control of everything, because you don't. I'm 30. I'm not claiming super wisdom, but I realized how stupid I was earlier in life. And I go, man, I was such an idiot. But when I get back in similar situations, I just feel like going right back in that rut of stupidity. It's like, that's where it's just natural right there. I just want to get self-righteous. But it never delivers me. It never saves me. It never redeems me. It never does anything of any value except leaves just a char of ash behind me. So wisdom doesn't deliver the wise. Wickedness doesn't deliver the fool. It says in verse 10, then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out from the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also was vanity. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. They just passed in California. A judge ruled it cruel and unusual punishment to execute people in California. If they're on death row, says we can't do it anymore because it takes so long to get to that end. It's cruel and unusual punishment because they don't know when their day of death is. Well, judge needs to read Ecclesiastes, but and no matter where you stand on corporal punishment, we have a system, we have a government system that intentionally has moved away from. You will be punished severely for severe crimes to a system that says you will be consoled ever so gently for severe crimes. And I get it. Things happen in life, encourage certain steps, but you have a system that says if you do bad things, it's okay. We got your back. We'll give you 3 squares a day. We'll let you watch all the cable you want. Give you an Xbox, some air conditioning, education. We got your back. Do what you want. And I know that's not grace. That is encouraging the next generation. That is encouraging other people. What encouragement do I have to pay my taxes? Not because taxes is the Christian thing to do, but because I choose to live in America, so I made this agreement with America to pay my taxes. What encouragement do I have to pay my taxes if the next person down the street isn't held accountable for it? Here's one. What encouragement do I have to drive the speed limit when other people don't? What encouragement do I have to not cheat on a test, to not plagiarize work when other people get away with it? So maybe wickedness is the way to go. You know, it says this, the wicked is buried. That's not saying that the wicked died. That's saying that the wicked had a proper burial. That's in this context, when the preacher is writing, to give someone a proper burial, that's a sign of respect. And then it goes on to say that this wicked used to go in and out of the holy place, and they were praised in the city where they did all these wicked things. Lindsay Lohan? Like, as long as you got enough money and you got the right publicity agent, you can do whatever you want. And because you're Justin Bieber, there's no judgment that's going to go out. So what does that teach the kids? Whether or not you have kids, your nieces, your nephews, your friends' kids, what is that telling them? Do whatever you want, and you're golden. Man, the preacher, he's always so good. So how does he jump out of this? He jumps out of this going, this is what he repeated back in 7. He says, though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked. Neither will he prolong his days like a shadow because he does not fear before God. Wickedness does not deliver the fool. Wisdom will not deliver the wise. The one who fears God will be saved. That is encouragement. That is excitement. That is getting to the point of the cross. How? Whose wisdom put Jesus on the cross? The world. The world's wisdom said, this is what we do. This is how we treat people who we don't like. What else got them there? Wickedness. What do the people have a consistent lack of? A fear of God. At what point did anyone walk up to God and say, I am a worm? You had moments and glimmers of it. But even after his death, after his resurrection, all the way through the end of the Bible, and even up to today, the standard mode of operation is to reject what Christ did. Is to say, I've got my wisdom. I've got my wickedness. I'll just do what I want. But it doesn't deliver. Yet I know it will be well with those who fear God. You know, we might be tempted to take that snippet. It'll be well. And we might be tempted to take that snippet, that small little verse, and jump in there and say, God, you lied because I fear you, but I still have problems. I don't like my job. I don't like my friends. I don't like my car. I don't like my shoes. I don't like my life. I don't like the way things are turning out. I don't like what you've doled out to me. And we'd be tempted to say, God, you lied right there. You lied because you said that it will be well for those who fear you. And so we could say, well, maybe I don't fear God because things aren't working out well for me. I'm learning this concept, so excuse me if it's a little rough, but it's this concept that for the world, seeing is believing. That's the standard. If you see it, then you'll believe it. Once I see it, then I'll believe it. That is not how the gospel works. I appreciate the Jesus video. I appreciate movies like The Passion of the Christ and The Son of God. I appreciate that. There's room and there's value for that. But how is the gospel spread? By word. Do you believe who it is you are listening to? If someone came running out of that room and said, the room is on fire, we need to get out now, are you going to say, well, I'm just going to wait to see it? Or are you going to take him on his word? Yet we fail as humanity, we fail to take God on his word. The Bible is his word. It's his recorded word. We fail to take it and say, I'm going to believe what you said about yourself. I'm going to believe about the Exodus, I'm going to believe about the creation, I'm going to believe about the fall, I'm going to believe about the cross. And then sometimes Christians, we go in and we say, okay, all right, I'm going to believe that. But then we get to verses like, it will be well with those who fear God. And then we say, I need to see it. God, I want to encourage you. And I don't want to encourage you as if I've got this down, because I've spent so much time in prayer over this the past 5 weeks. Because like a God, if things will go well for me if I fear you, then why do I keep going back to Ebix? I don't like to be there. Why am I there? And it comes down to, John, do you believe what God said? He promised his son and he fulfilled. What opportunity we have to rest in the word of the promises that he gave. He didn't say things will be perfect forever once you say, all right, Jesus, perfect. What he says is, it will go well. And what is the will go well? That redemption, that salvation that we are waiting for, the eternal life that we are waiting for, that one day Christ will return. He will be clean, no longer covered in the filth that we put him through on the cross. Glowing in holiness. And we have that opportunity to accept the word that he promised or to reject it. And I encourage you, take that opportunity to say, no, you know what? Wisdom is stupid. If I don't fear God, wisdom is stupid. Wickedness is stupid. If I don't fear God, it's stupid. Take the time to rest in the promise of God, in the word of what he said. Don't take it on what you can see, because what we can see is broken. We've been reading Ecclesiastes enough. We've been studying Ecclesiastes enough to know that when we look around the world, things are broken. The preacher goes on to say that the deeds of the wicked are rewarded as if they did deeds of the righteous, and the righteous are punished as if they did the deeds of the wicked. And that's harsh. That's harsh getting through. Why is it I have to go through crap, God, when that person over there who hates you, it looks like his life is easy cheesy. I mean, he's just going. He's got spinners on his car. He's got the 12s, and you know, he's just got the grades. Things are going well for him. Why is life hard for me? Because the world's broken. So we have the opportunity to trust in God, to say, you know what, God? Despite the circumstances, I know things are really hard, but I'm going to trust you. And that's hard. And that's really hard. You know, if you guys ever did a team building thing where someone stands on a 3-4 foot ledge and they fall back. Oh yeah, it's easy. Go, you know, you're going to have fun. Yeah. Okay. You get up there like, oh gosh, please don't let them fall. I go, oh man, the short person's, oh, I'm going to die. We're so quick to see encouragement at a distance, to accept promises at a distance. But when it comes to us where we have to trust God, that's hard. That is so hard. That is so hard. And if you're not involved in a community of believers, if you're not cinched up with other believers, I there's no hope. It's all vanity. And I commend joy. It's the first time he commends joy. He doesn't just say, that's man's lot, is to eat, drink, and be joyful and be merry. He says, I commend joy. I encourage joy. I say, go be joyful. He says, I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. It's not slap on the Christian smile and say, okay, you know, things are going well. You know, I watched some VeggieTales to get me all pumped up and excited. It's, you know, life is horrible. And it says earlier, and I do believe chapter 3, that unless God gives that joy, you're not going to have it. If God doesn't give the happiness, it's not there. But despite this life, take the opportunity, believe the word that you've heard, and trust in what God has promised, that those who fear him, it will go well. We may not see it, but we're not a faith of what we see. We're a faith of what we hear. And we believe the testimony. We believe the testimony is true. Wickedness will not deliver. Wisdom will not deliver. But the one who fears God will be redeemed. Let's pray. God, I thank you for God, I thank you for coming through every time. And God, I even thank you for those times that from my perspective, you didn't come through. things are hard. And I ask right now that for these people, the believers and the non-believers, that God, you would make yourself real, not in what they can see, but in the word, that you would give each of us the faith to believe your word, to believe the testimony of what you have said and the testimony that you've given the believer. God, change our life this week and next. Change our disposition to how we are seeing things. To stop trying to charge through life self-righteous, and stop trying to charge your life cutting corners, because it doesn't work to be righteous anyways. Now teach us to fear you and to trust you, and to learn how to enjoy the graces that you've given us in this life. We love you. To you be the glory forever. Amen.